Hi, it's Michelle Rubini.
Hey, Michelle, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Now, I got to tell you, people think that they don't know who I'm talking to. My guess is if they've seen Face the Music or Name That Tune, they have at least seen your right hand. But this man is just a legend. I mean, you've been on so many top 40 hits, thousands of recordings, of course, with the Wrecking Crew here. And you were on a lot of those. Now, you've got your brand new book, Life in the Key of Rubini. It's in stores right now. It's also on your website, michellerubini.com. That's michellerubini.com. Of course, also amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I'm having a great time.
I got to tell you, doing some research for this, I'm really looking forward to this interview because you, my friend, are a free spirit. And I'm all about the free spirit. You're very personification of the swinging 60s. That's quite the compliment.
Thank you. I hope so. Because I'm stuck with it one way or the other.
Exactly. But I tell you what, boy, you look at this list of hits you played on. I'm looking at a list of just all these songs here. I could do a top 40 countdown just based on your music here. You've worked with so many people. So let's get right into this. What was the biggest hit record you ever played on?
Well, I was asked that question once before. I had to think about it. So this time I don't have to think about it so long. I did a little research. And so this is what I found out. I Want You Back by the Jackson 5.
Awesome.
Was like the first number one hit record that I played on, and it was on the charts just forever, you know. And it was, and not only that, it almost became, as one of my black friends say to me, it became an anthem for African Americans, and which I never quite understood why, because of the lyrics, but anyway, so that was a huge seller, and so that was very big. But if you go down to the theme from the movie Ghost,
right, Unchained Melody, wow,
with Unchained Melody, that song, although I don't think it hit number one, but it's stayed on the chart. It's still on the charts, you know? And so overall, it's sold more records and been heard more, you know, than just about any song in history. It just never goes away. And I keep on getting royalty checks. It just amazes me, you know. It just keeps on going on and on and on.
And you're, like I said, this resume is amazing. Baby Love by the Supremes, you were on that. You played with Ike, yeah, and Tina Turner, Frankie Valli. Yep. But let me ask you this. You've also met Elvis Presley. What was it like meeting Elvis for the first time?
Well, that was exciting. That was exciting and intimidating. I was only about 19 years old, I think, or 20 years old when,
wow,
I first met Elvis.
Wow.
I was actually on a movie with him. That's how I first ran into him, because I was my godfather. I have a godfather who was a movie producer in Hollywood. He was famous for doing cheap movies, cheap B movies, but making more money, you know, dollar for dollar, than any other movie. and his name was Sam Katzman, and he produced two movies with Elvis. One of them was Kissin' Cousins, and the other was Viva Las Vegas. And he had been hiring me as a musical extra in some of his extravaganzas. He liked doing musical movies. And so I had already been in a movie that the first movie that I did for him was a movie called Hootenanny Hoot with Johnny Cash and Judy Hensky. and he hired me to play banjo. I'm walking around the set with a swimming suit on, with a banjo around my neck. And that was the first one. And then after that, he produced a movie called Twist Around the Clock. Remember
oh, yeah.
the twist?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he produced the movie that caught that craze. I mean, you know, when that song went number one, I'm telling you, he had a movie finished and out in 2 weeks, and, you know, starring Chubby Checker.
Unbelievable.
And so I was in the stage band for that. By that time I had joined a band that were known as the Marquettes.
Okay.
And which had already had a couple of hit records themselves. And although it wasn't really them, that was it was a stage band. The real band was the Wrecking Crew, right?
Right, exactly.
I played with them like in a nightclub one night. I just sat in, and then they asked me to join the band, and so I joined the band, and that's how I got to meet the producer of the Marquettes, who then started putting me on the recording sessions. And because those guys that were this road band for the Marquettes had previously been running around the country advertising themselves as the Hollywood Argyles. You remember Alley-Oop?
Yes.
Alley-Oop.
Yes.
Oop, oop. So they had been going around singing Alley-Oop, you know, to the rest of the country. And so I went to my godfather. I said, listen, I can get the Hollywood Argyles to be in your movie. And he said, great.
That's awesome.
And it won't cost you any more than extra scale, 30 bucks a day.
It's calling who you know.
Right. So anyway, that's how I got into that movie, Twist Around the Clock. And then later it was back to the question. I'm sorry, I really went sideways.
Oh, that's okay. That's what I love. The free spirit in action. It's fun.
So it was Elvis, and you know, when I got to do the Elvis movie, of course he was there, and he's very personable. He was a low key guy, almost shy. And very nice. And on the breaks, between breaks, he liked to sing. He liked, with a couple of his guys. There was a group that used to back him up, and a guy named Charlie Hodge was one of the singers. And he liked to sing with Charlie, and with one of his bodyguards, Red West, who later became an actor. So Charlie and Red and Elvis used to get together, and Charlie and Elvis would play guitars, acoustic guitars, and they'd sing songs, you know, together.
That's so cool.
And yeah, they'd sing like things like My Heart Cries for You. And so I just walked up and, you know, watched them sing this stuff. I was fascinated, you know, how
right.
They just tried to make the harmony perfect and the vibrato perfect. They were just fanatics about trying to do it perfectly, you know. It's how they passed their time. So I met him, and I started hanging out with that group of guys because I was a musician.
Right.
And to jump forward, there's a whole story about that in the book, which I don't want to give away the whole thing
because
I want to sell a few books.
Teaser, got a tease, right?
but later on, I ran into to Elvis, you know, much later again when he was looking for musicians for his Las Vegas band. And I talked to him about that. That little situation didn't work out for us because of a money difference.
Right.
But then again later, a few years later, when he was performing there in Las Vegas, and I was Sonny and Cher's musical director, you know, and arranger,
sure.
We were there working also at the same time Sonny was. So one night I took my date, and we went over to see Elvis. And after the show, Elvis asked me to come backstage, and so I got to go back and talk with him and hang out for a while, you know, and watch him start to sing with Charlie again. and that was before he, you know, was really abusing drugs. He was still in good shape, you know.
In his prime.
And he was in his prime, and it was just wonderful. And, you know, to me, he'll always be the king.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you've got someone like that in your repertoire. You've also, as you mentioned, worked with Sonny and Cher. You were also part of the Loggins and Messina thing for the last two albums. Let me ask you this. Does everyone break up after working with you?
You know, I've often wondered that myself. Please don't tell anybody. I'll never get hired by another group. I know. I joined Loggins. No, we'll see. I joined Sonny and Cher, and then they break up. And then I joined Loggins and Messina, and they break up. And then I joined Seals and Crofts, and they break up. You know. Sometimes I think I was cursed.
No, I don't think that.
You know, every group breaks up, you know?
Right, at some
point. All break up sooner or later.
Speaking of breaking up and getting together in relationships and on again, off again, you know where I'm going with this. You dated the original Wonder Woman, Linda Carter. What was that like?
What was that like?
Oh.
I can't answer that on air.
No, I mean, but to sit there and, like, watch TV, and there's Linda Carter, like, hey, yeah, well, I know her.
You know that dream you had one night that you just really never wanted to wake up from?
Yep. Kind of
that
like
was
that.
Linda Carter. She was amazing.
That is
she
awesome.
Was just amazing. She was a real Wonder Woman.
That is so
let
cool.
Let me tell you.
So cool.
It was typecasting from the word go.
Absolutely. And one more fun question I've got. I just have to know the answer to this. Was Jim Nabors, of course, Gomer Pyle, was he as much of a hillbilly as he portrayed on television in the Andy Griffith Show, or was that just an act?
That was totally an act.
Wow.
And he did such a good job of hiding it. People are still asking that question. They don't know. No, he was very well educated. He had a lovely voice. I mean, he had a regular nice a deep baritone voice and he spoke the Queen's English. But he came from what was it, Arkansas, I think, or Tennessee, I don't remember. But anyway, he could lay that accent on so thick, and he raised his voice, and you know, for that Gomer Pyle character, and it was just amazing. But he was a wonderful singer. You know, he loved opera when he was a young man, and he listened to opera records all the time. And he would sing along with the arias in the operas, and he learned how to sing in an operatic style from singing sing along with Mitch, right? Sing along with Paganini, you know.
Wow.
And he surrounded himself with people that were of that character or that ilk, you know.
Right.
So you know, I would go to dinner parties at his house, and Marilyn Horn would be the guest of the night, you know, and then she'd stand up, and I'd accompany her, and she'd be singing, you know, something, you know, to the guests at the party. And another time it was Beverly Sills, you know, Beverly Sills and Marilyn Horn and Beverly Sills were two of the best singers of the 20th century, and he hung out with them all the time, and that was, you know, what he liked to do, and so he would definitely was not a hillbilly.
I could sit here all day, Michelle, and ask you questions. You're a fascinating person. I guess I'm just gonna have to go to your website, and there's more video interviews there. MichelleRubini.com. It's MichelleRubini.com. The book is available right now on Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, of course. An amazing book, Life in the Key of Rubini. You got to check it out. A Hollywood child prodigy and his wild adventures in crime, music, sex, Sinatra, and Wonder Woman. That's a great title.
Thank you. It's been fun talking to you.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.